Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Paul Garcia Show, the show on which I speak to remarkable people from Central Illinois about their incredible lives, experiences, and insights. Today, I have a very special guest, and her name is Becky Billiter. Becky is a retreat coordinator for Deeper Still, which is a healing ministry that conducts weekend retreats for men and women who've had abortions in the past. And this is under the umbrella of the Pregnancy Resource Center in Bloomington, Illinois. Now, we're going to talk briefly about these organizations, these programs, but mostly we're going to talk about your incredible story, Becky, or as you say, God's incredible story. But firstly, I'd like to thank you just for making the time to come onto the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me. This is his story, so I'm willing to share whatever you want me to share, whatever he wants me to share.
Well, wonderful. I sincerely thank you for that, because it's a brave thing to do. I mean, I talked briefly to you on Catholic Spirit Radio a few weeks ago, and I just got a little five-minute glimpse into your story, and immediately it was captivating, it was powerful, and then sadly we had to go to commercial break. So that was kind of the crazy part of that whole radio story conversation. On here, we won't have commercial breaks. I'll put in commercials later, but for the most part, it's going to just be a raw conversation.
Okay.
Let's start with, how long have you been working with the Pregnancy Resource Center and being the coordinator for these retreats that you were talking about, or that I was talking about, the Deeper Still retreats?
Okay, so after my own retreat in October 2015, in April of 2016, I started serving on the Deeper Still team. I became the retreat coordinator just in the last 6 months or so.
Okay. Well,
I've been on the team since 2016.
Got it. Now, you alluded to it right there, so I mean, we can kind of transition right into this story. You went to your own retreat.
Correct.
This retreat is for men and women who've had abortions, so you put this together. You must have had an abortion of your own, and if you wouldn't mind, could you just tell me what led up to that, and then maybe also you going to this retreat? That's a lot of information right there.
Correct.
So I guess I'll give you the mic.
You know, it's hard to, let's see. I think for me, for my retreat, when I didn't realize one of the things with Deeper Still, they talking about abortion wounded heart. And I did not know I had an abortion wounded heart. That abortion wounded heart has many symptoms that we may chalk up to that it's just who we are. But what happened, and how I was right at the very beginning, how I got to the Deeper Still retreat, I was sitting in my church in September 27th, really, of 2015, and I had been crying out to the Lord to go deeper. There was a root that I didn't know that I had. I knew there was something that was holding me back from what the Lord had for me. I felt like I couldn't love the way He loved. And I was crying out, and I was wanting to go deeper. And so when I was at our church in the bulletin, the words, I looked at what the events were that were coming up, and the word deeper still was there. It popped off of the bulletin to me, and I'm like, oh my God, oh my, it says deeper and still, which I said, yes, I want to go to that. And then it had for women and men that have had an abortion in their past. And I'm like, well, I met both criteria. And so I knew immediately I was going to that retreat, and it was within 2 weeks. And so I filled out my application on October 1st. And then October 7th was a retreat, and I was at that retreat. And God did amazing things. And that's when He revealed about the abortion wounded heart and really took me deeper and healed me, took that root, massaged my heart, and took me deeper and has healed me ever, you know, from then on. And my yes is to Him.
Now, when you were sitting in church and you said you wanted to love deeper still, you want to be closer to Christ, did you know that the primary roadblock was this maybe unaddressed event of your past, the abortion?
No.
Or you were just wondering, what's keeping me from loving how I want to love?
loving the way Christ loves. That was in my prayer. I do a lot of journaling, and for like 3 or 4 months prior to that, there was something. I had gone through a spiritual formation program for 2 years, and my paper that I wrote was shame. It was a topic of shame. And in that paper, I was unable to write the word abortion. And immediately when I sent that paper in for my final project, I was ashamed of my shame paper. And it was wrecking me. I was on my face out before the Lord wondering what was going on. But I think when I look back, I just see God massaging my heart and wanting me, preparing my heart to go deeper with Him and healing my abortion wounded heart. I did not know that. I had no clue, but He did. And so once I was read that in the church bulletin, it just jumped out at me. I had been crying out to go deeper. The deeper word was right there. And then having the abortion was also in my background. So,
interesting. Okay, now you said that having the abortion, you didn't know that that was a major roadblock for you, loving how Christ loves. But you did say that not too long before that, you were unable to write the word. So it had some weight in your mind.
Right.
It was a negative thing in your mind, it seemed. But am I understanding this correctly? While you couldn't even write the word, and that was bothering you, you didn't know that that was the thing holding you back from loving like Christ.
Right. I think it was fear of man. What will they think? You know, having that fear. I knew that God had forgiven me way back when I was 17, when I received Jesus as my Savior. But in my heart, I buried that root of that wound of abortion deep, deep within me. And so the abortion, even though I couldn't write the word, I felt like it was more fear of man or, you know, fear of what people will think. I did not realize that all of the things that I may have experienced, I mean, we all have journeys. We all have twists and turns in our life. I just didn't realize that in those twists and turns, that some of those things that were the choices that I was making throughout life was based on that wound of an abortion. And, you know, was one of the causes, one of the root causes. And it wasn't until I went to my retreat and sat before the Lord and heard His truth spoken over me and was able to grieve the baby, that's when I realized that I had an abortion wounded heart. And He was healing it.
Now I'm writing down a note really quick. I want to know what the truth spoken over you was and what that entails. But before we get to that, you mentioned you were forgiven when you were 17, which means this happened. The abortion was done prior to that. And I was wondering if you can maybe tell me, if you're willing, Becky.
Sure.
What exactly happened, and how old were you even?
Well, they always say, you know, to say the hard thing first. So when I was 15, when I had my abortion, and in, you know, when we're even at the retreats, we talk about what was some of the things that happened to you prior to the abortion, and then what were some of the things during the abortion that you remember, and what were some of the things, how did that change your life afterwards? So kind of going back to the very beginning, like I said, I grew up, I lived in a small town in central Illinois. I grew up, there's a family of, well, I have 4 siblings. I think from a very early age, I didn't feel like I belonged. I don't know why. I just felt like I didn't belong. And so in that, there seemed like there started to become an attack of shame on me. You know, we grew up in the 60s. There was a lot going on in the 60s, but it was just a lot of I just felt shame, like I didn't belong. I didn't know it was shame. So going into my junior high years, there was some bullying a lot. You know, I was, even though it's like hard to talk about, you know, without kind of going into a lot of detail, but one of the things that happened when I was in the start of seventh grade is that I was hit in the face by a ninth grade girl the first day of school. And that, I think, put that stake even further into my heart that I didn't belong, you know, or that there was something wrong with me. And in that, you know, I experienced a lot of bullying, you know, in my school years. And so I think what led to my decisions and choices was maybe driven by that shame or not feeling like I belonged in that, and fear of man and what will people think and those kinds of things. And so,
well, really quick, before we started this conversation, you let me know that you're a retired school psychologist. And that's really interesting hearing you talk about this, because one, I'm not surprised you became a school psychologist, but it's really cool to hear you psychoanalyze your former self. It's like, if from my perspective, if you were already feeling like you didn't belong and like, man, maybe I don't really belong here. I don't know if people really like me. And then a older girl punches you or slaps you in the face. What was it? Punch or slap? Do you remember?
It was a slap.
Slap. I won't even ask why. But anyway, it's like that will just quadruple that feeling of I don't belong here, so much so that an older girl is willing to slap me publicly, maybe.
Correct.
I couldn't imagine. Well, and then he's like, well, I need some validation that I even belong anywhere, that I matter at all. So what's the best way I could validate myself? And anyway, I'm taking the reins a little too much here.
No.
What happened after that then? That just continue your story, I guess.
In my story, and it is my story, and it's God's story. So I was chased down by girls wanting to beat me up. And then in one point I was taken out from the movie theater that we attended, and they put me into the alley and wanted to hit me, and did hit me. And that was in seventh grade. So that message was driven in me. And so from then on, I think I was in survival mode. And the survival mode was just, I don't even know if I processed it all. And I would do things to cope. I started drinking.
In seventh grade?
Not in seventh grade. This is, you know, during my adolescent years. Just trying to fit in, you know. And then when I was a sophomore, I felt like I had no friends. And so any of the attention that was given to me, I really, you know, soaked it in or whatever. And so that's, you know, I think trying to find love in all the wrong places, a boy had asked me out, and I started dating him. And at that point, I didn't realize it was an emotional, abusive relationship, or I guess that now I can look back and see that. At the time, I didn't. You know, I just thought I deserved that. I deserved to be treated like that. And it's, you know, I don't want to psychoanalyze what happened to me in the past. It's factual. But in my heart, the messages that were just, it cut me, you know. There was a deep wounds there that I didn't realize I had until, you know, as the Lord started to unpack those. So at 15, I was dating a senior in high school. And so that's how I ended up pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then a month later is when I had the abortion. not knowing, still completely kind of walking through life in a protection mode or a survival mode and just going through what do I need to do to make sure that I am living. Mm-hmm. So that was when I was a sophomore, and so I had the abortion in probably, I think, around July of 2000. Of 1975. Okay. And I don't know. Am I answering your question?
Yes, and I want to ask you then, firstly, before we continue here, what were your parents doing during this whole time? I mean, their daughter was getting abused often by a number of girls. Now, this is a different time today. They say parents get involved too much sometimes, but it seems like your parents, what did they do? I'm just curious. Because you surely told them that I was at the movie theater and a group of girls dragged me out and beat me up in an alley.
I didn't tell them.
Why didn't you tell them?
I didn't tell them because I didn't want them to think that I wasn't liked.
If you've been living with an aching back, debilitating imbalances, or any physical discomfort and just want to get back to living a fit and happy life, look no further than In Motion Fitness Center and Outpatient Therapy at Fairview Haven in Fairbury, Illinois. Our highly skilled therapy team will guide you through proven and effective exercises to help you regain your strength, movement, and mobility, all with our renowned level of love and care. Live your best life. Call our therapy team at 815-692-6724. To find out how we can serve you today.
They had a lot going on themselves. My dad was a police officer, state police officer. There's just a lot of things that were going on within the home setting. I'm a middle child. I have an older brother and then a younger brother and a younger sister. And so at that time, there just seemed, you know, home and school were kind of separated, and I didn't tell them because I didn't want them to think I wasn't liked.
That's very sad.
I felt like I could handle it, or I didn't feel comfortable telling them. I don't know.
And perhaps this is an offensive question to ask, but do you know why they were after you?
I think it had to do, well, the first time was because I was naive, and our neighborhood was just basically kind of boys, and we had a new neighbor move in, and they had an older girl, and so we kind of lived on the outskirts of Canton, and so we befriended each other. And it was right before school started. We went to the movie, and she invited me to go to the movie. And so I said, yeah. And so at that time, I didn't realize that she had plans to set with a boy, and then his friend had plans to set with her friend, which was me. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first time that I ever gone to a movie and setting with a boy. And then, unfortunately, the girl that slapped me, that was her boyfriend at the time, and so I guess that's, so I feel like at the time a lot of it had to do with she said, they said, or what territorial, you know, boys, I don't know.
Wow.
And
I think
once you're targeted as a, you know, once you have a target, I probably walked around like I had an attitude. I don't know. You know, something that I must have been showing, you know, maybe fear. I don't know.
But you were kind of displaying yourself, even if unconsciously, as the target. Right. And you had a label probably too. Right. Because I know that high school age girls they're pretty good at spreading that label to everyone and letting them know what they say you are. So, wow, That's so vicious. I mean, I've talked to a few women on the show and read some books. I really enjoyed psychology, and they look at these young girls and boys and how they interact and how they bully, actually. And at least a decade plus ago, it's like boys were more likely to get in physical altercations. And then what they would find is a lot of time they'd have that altercation, then they'd be closer after. There's this weird bonding that would happen a lot of the time. Whereas women and girls, they seldom would have a physical altercation. Usually it was social, though. It was like destroying your name and destroying your reputation, which was worse, and it lasted way longer, and it's more vicious. I would much rather take a punch to the face. It sounds like you kind of got both, which is especially hard.
Right. I think the time that I went to the show, the two or three of those girls that were in ninth grade came in and looked for me and tapped me on the shoulder. It used to be called the teen center. There was a teen center around our neighbor, around there in the town. And so I think they kind of got together there. I never really went there. And they came into the show and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "We want to see you outside." Well, that's not a good thing. And so I waited, and when I did walk out, there was three girls there, and they were saying, I called them a name. And so it just kind of went on from there, and then that's when they took me out to the alley. I just feel like, you know, from seventh grade on, that's kind of, you know, that was become part of me, of being chased or being threatened like that, never knowing when that was going to in. And then I think the crowd humiliation of all of that happening in front of others. You know, here it's one thing to not be liked, but it's another thing to have it be shown to others, somebody's distaste of you or dislike of you. And so I feel like, you know, that sense of belonging became even more driven, not belonging became even more prominent in my life, you know, to where I didn't know how to respond or to react to people.
I am so sorry. That's hard to hear, because it makes you think, like, if I had a daughter and that happened to her, that it's breaking my heart now. I don't have a daughter, obviously, but wow, gosh, I'm just sorry. And not to leave that story, but then we were just talking about, you know, you got pregnant your sophomore year with a senior boy.
Correct.
And a month into that pregnancy is when you got that abortion. What was the thought process? You said you just wanted to survive. Did anyone guide you through this process? Did he guide you through that? Were you comfortable making that decision?
Well, it was after... It was about probably a month after I found out I was pregnant. We had discussions, and I tried to look back, and I don't remember a lot of those discussions. I know that I went to Pekin at one point and talked with someone and I can't remember all of those conversations as well. I could not tell my parents. I was fearful of doing that. I was scared. I was alone. I didn't know what to do. He paid for the abortion. It was in Chicago, so we drove about 2.5 hours away. He took me. At the time, though, there was more emotional and physical abuse going on as well. And so all I wanted at that time was the mistake to be taken care of. And that's hard for me to say, but that's how I felt. Walking into the, you know, I don't remember that much about the abortion. I remember the drive there was horrible, but I remember seeing a brown building and going into that brown building. It was cold. There were a few people there that I, you know, that were just a few scattering of people is what I remember. And then taking me in, it was like I just knew I wanted it over. And so walking out of that, I do remember, and this is, you know, difficult to say, I smiled because it was over. It was like, now I could get on with my life, which is a total lie. But at the time, too, I hated me. I hated Becky. It was like all the other things that had happened in my past kind of compiled right then and there, that I started to have that same distaste of me as others that had hit me across my face or talked, you know, talked about me or just didn't like me. And, you know, not to say that I probably didn't, you know, I'm sure I had an attitude, you know, and they didn't know what they were doing. You know, kids don't know what they're doing.
That's pretty profound of you to be able to say, to not be bitter now, even.
No.
For you to understand that they're kids is pretty wild. I don't think most people would be able to say that, to say, although they made me hate myself and they beat me up and ganged up on me, that they're, you're more or less saying, like, they're kids. Like, kids are dumb, right?
Well,
maybe not kids are dumb.
But they didn't make me hate myself. That was the message. That, you know, they may have driven a message that they don't like me, but I interpreted that I didn't like me either. And then after, when I walked out of that abortion clinic, I didn't like me. I hated me. I guess that's how I dealt with it. I numbed myself out. I locked it down. I remember driving home somewhat. It was awful. I remember walking. I went through the back door of my parents' home because it was like a school day. And I walked back in. I walked in the back of my parents' home door. Sorry. The door, and walk downstairs as if nothing ever happened, and never saying a word, and not telling them for a long time.
Did your boyfriend go up to Chicago with you?
He is the one that drove me there, right, okay. And also he's the one that paid for it.
Right, that's right. Okay. It's interesting what you were saying about the fact that he was emotionally abusive. And you've probably heard it. You accept the love you think you deserve.
Correct.
And you didn't probably think you deserved much, if I'm understanding correctly.
Right.
Okay. Well, you come home, act as if nothing ever happens. Did your parents ever find out? Are your parents, are they still around?
They are deceased.
Okay.
And my parents are loving parents. I ended up telling them later, after I was married, I told my mom. I couldn't remember if I told my dad, but then once I went to my own retreat, I went and told them both again, sharing what the retreat, and then also sharing later as I was going through the retreats as a team member, sharing about that as well, and sharing with to my siblings too.
Mm-hmm. What was their reaction to that? What was your household like? Was it a Christian household? Or I know it was a rural town. A lot of times those rural towns are heavily Christian, but was it a, what was their reaction, siblings and parents?
Well, it was a while because it was 41 years.
Oh, that's
after,
right.
After, you know, it was 41 years of carrying that abortion wound because it wasn't until 2015 when I went to my own retreat.
Right.
I know that I believe I told my mom before that. I know that before, you know, it was right after I was married, probably in my 20s. It's just, you know, it's just life. You know how life happens. After the abortion, after I was home and after my life was, you know, started going on, you know, I want to move on. I didn't want to be around that boy at all. I did not want to be around him and did not, he's just, it, I disliked him. totally. But I feel like it's probably because he was a reminder of what happened. And then also with the abuse. And so he kind of stalked me for a while and was kind of physically abusive over that. Well, he was, you know, he came into my parents' home when they were asleep, and he was waiting for me to come home. And that's kind of when finally the message was, you know, after he was in my house, I'm very fortunate and I'm very blessed that he never woke up my mom and dad, because, as I said, my dad is a police officer, and I don't know what could have happened. But at that time, that was where the drawing of, please leave me alone, I never want to see you, to him. And so after that, he left me alone. My parents, you know, at the time when we were growing up, we went to the Lutheran church. And so we were in Sunday school. We went through confirmation. My mom and dad would go to church. My mom and dad would go to Sunday school. I don't really remember, you know, reading the Bible together, going through scripture together. Confirmation was a thing you do as a Lutheran, and you go through that to get confirmation so that you could be an accolade, or, you know, I guess that's the right word.
Fairbury Furniture is Central Illinois' premier furniture store. This family-owned business offers a vast selection of premium furniture items from all of your favorite brands, including Sealy, Best Home Furnishings, Leather Italia, Tempur-Pedic, and Ashley, just to name a few. And right next door to their gorgeous 7,000-square-foot furniture showroom, you will find the Fairbury Furniture Mattress Store, home to all of the latest and greatest mattresses in any and all sizes. Also inside Fairbury Furniture is the popular WC Market, a beloved shop that offers an ever-changing selection of unique gifts and fashionable home decor. Here at Fairbury Furniture, the staff is always helpful and friendly, and they are well-stocked with all the mattresses, tables, chairs, recliners, couches, and decorative pillows that your heart desires. So make your home interior beautiful, comfortable, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture.
Come on down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
After I did tell my mom and dad, was a believer. What happened was when I was 15, when I had the abortion, I graduated a year early because I wanted to get away from all the bullying.
Sure.
So I had enough credits to where I could graduate a year early. And it was right after I turned the age of 17, I was in a small town that my dad was raised up in Cuba, Illinois. And I heard there was a lady it was on a summer evening, summer night, and there was a lady that came out of her house that was a friend of where I was at. And she's just started sharing the good news. And at that time, I wanted that. It was the first time I heard Jesus' story much differently than what I did growing up.
What was she saying exactly?
She was giving, you know, a salvation story to believe in Jesus. He is the truth, the life, everlasting. How he loves us and how he died on the cross for us and shed his blood for us. And that we are truly forgiven, and that it's a free gift. It's a free gift of salvation. And I wanted that. He was my friend. It was a friend. He was a friend 24/7. He wasn't going to hit me. He wasn't going to condemn me. He wasn't going to punch me. He was going to love me and talk to me and just share together. Me sharing my life with him, me being in and through him. And it just resonated with me that I want that. And so I prayed the prayer of salvation alone in my own bed that night and asked the Lord into my heart. And I know from that moment on, I had a friend 24/7. And, the battlegrounds we're always kind of set in different ways in our life. We go through different trials and tribulations. But I always knew that he was right there with me. I could look down one side and I could look down the left and I could look down the right. There may not be anyone standing there with me as like I was when I was 15 or when I was in seventh grade. But at the age of 17, when that happened, I knew, and throughout my life, I know when I look down those lines, there may not be anybody standing there, but he is, and he's my warrior, and he's fighting for me, and he has ever since.
Wow. It sounds like the fact that your incredible journey has turned out to be what it is, something positive, something inspiring, it's almost weird to think that there wasn't some person that was with you the whole way and like, hey, you don't have a parent to thank, a sibling, a great friend to thank. It was Christ. You couldn't even touch him.
Correct.
But he was the reason that you were able to maybe even persevere at all. Who knows?
Right. And I know nothing goes to waste. So those things that when I was in Sunday school, when I was in Lutheran church, when I was witnessing my mom and dad, the way that they were carrying their life and honorability, truth, just steadfast in what you believe in. I know that when I was in that alley, I know that Christ was with me. I know that when I was hit, and I remember even those things that I learned in Sunday school, like turning your cheek so many times if somebody, was going. And I remember standing in the alley, and I remember when they put me in the middle, and this big, gigantic, at the time, in my eyes, she was a giant. And I remember closing my eyes and just saying, Lord, and I don't know if I said Lord, but that's who I was addressing. And I said, how many times do I turn my cheek? And because they were hitting me on my face prior to them carrying me to the alley and with my own hand. And so
they were hitting you with your own hand?
And so I sat there and I just closed my eyes and I said, Lord, well, how many times do I turn my cheek? And all of a sudden I closed my eyes and I swung my arm. I don't remember it, but I hit the person that was there and the crowd just kind of dispersed. And that wasn't the end of it. But when I look back, when I, Jesus' story in Isaiah 53, he was hit, he was spit on, he was, smolten, he was, that's the right word, he took a lot of our sins. He took a lot emotional, physically, and everything. And so he knows. He felt the same things I have felt. He felt those things. And and that is where that relationship, he started teaching me that from the very beginning. I said yes to him when I started walking with him when I was 17. And has taught me a lot and continues to do so. And I don't hold any bitterness. I know a few of the girls have apologized to me in my past, about that. And it's because, it's the way we were all growing up. And I say this in different ways, but I wouldn't change anything because I know who I am now. I know that God uses everything. He doesn't let anything go to waste. And he has given me the courage and the bravery to speak about it. I'm not hiding in a corner. I'm not, I may not have dealt with it all well, but he's used that too. And I know that he loves them just as much as he loves me.
It's amazing. It's amazing hearing you say all this. It really is. It's the amazing good things that can come from terrible events, when you respond to them with grace, even if it's years later, is just profound. It's unbelievable sometimes. It's unbelievable hearing you say that you have no ill will towards these girls and that some have apologized to you. It's like you're really over it. It's remarkable. And then the way you've responded is with grace. And I always hear, if today you hear his voice, harden not your heart. What I've come to understand that to mean is like when you feel the Holy Spirit kind of telling you something in your subconscious, it's your, you feel something saying, hey, you probably shouldn't do this.
Right.
Or you should do this. If today you hear his voice, harden not your heart. Listen to it and do the thing that you know that God's telling you
Amen.
To do. And it's just don't harden up. Don't harden up. Let it take you. And it sounds like you have let it take you. And where is it taking you? Who knows what kind of incredible impact you've had on the women, multiple women that have gone to the retreats that you have a large part in handling.
Right.
So you've done the utmost good because of the terrible events that have happened in mm-hmm. your past. And certainly it must be God's grace that's allowed you to do this, right?
Oh, yes. God's grace and mercy. And his mercies are new every morning. God's grace is, he covers it. It's grace upon grace upon grace. He softens our heart if we're willing, you know. Through the years, like I said, there's a lot of trials and tribulations, but he's blessed me. So I have two children, grown children, adult children. I have was remarried in 2005, and we have 8 grandchildren. So the things that, you know, our life's journey, there's a lot of trials and tribulations, but through that, it's through his grace and his mercy. And our perseverance, our yes is the most important thing to him. My yes, when I was in 17, when I was in that ditch in Cuba, my yes to receive him. From then on, all the yeses. He wants our yes. And our yeses accumulate to where he brings us to where we are now. And when I look in a room, when I'm at a retreat, and knowing some of the stories that may be shared, just to know that God has given me the compassion and has given me a voice to be able to speak into what, to be used by him as a vessel, you know, to be his hands and feet and his voice.
Now, I just want to know this. We're kind of going back to the beginning of your story, and I forgot to ask it. When you went into that abortion clinic, first of all, was it a Planned Parenthood, or is that even a thing in 74?
Well, it was 75.
75?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I don't know if when I went to Pekin, if it was a Planned Parenthood or what. I don't know. It was like I was in a fog, and I lived in a fog for almost 41 years then later. I mean, I really truly feel like I lived in a fog. And so I don't know when we pulled up to that brown building if it was a Planned Parenthood or not. It was an abortion clinic. I don't remember that much about it. I am wanting to visit that and pray over that land. I'm trying to find that out, which clinic that was. But I haven't yet. So,
do you remember anyone? Did you know what was going on? Did you know that there was a baby that was being killed? I hope I don't sound too extreme. But
no,
did
that's
you,
a good question. No. I no one told me it was. No one told me it was not. I mean, it was a blob of cells. I mean, that's what, it never really registered. It was just, to me, it was a mistake. And I don't want to be caught. I was 15. I don't want my mom and dad to know. I have fear. And so at that time, I did not realize it was a baby, but subconsciously, I'm sure I did. Because it was, I took a life. I had innocent blood on my hands. Did I think of it like that then? No. But I sure tried to cover it up. I sure tried to use alcohol, whatever I could use to numb me. You know, I tried to do the things to cope with what was going on. Not only from the shame before, but now the shame of having an abortion, feeling like a murderer. I know there were times where I felt like I had murdered. So then that would answer, yeah, it was a baby. But did it go into my heart? I don't know if it did at that time.
I've spoken to one other woman personally who's had an abortion. And, you know, the women I've talked to that have had that happen are very few. But they have been deeply remorseful and they've regretted what they did hugely. I want to ask, I don't know if you know, do many women feel regret or remorse after an abortion? Or do most of them feel good about it?
I don't think anyone feels good about it. I didn't feel good about it. I think there is a lot of regret. I think there's a lot of pushing down, locking away, being in detaching. I think the word is detachment. I detached emotionally from that. And so by doing that, you can justify, you know, that was the past. That was then. You know, I'm moving on now. It wasn't until I was at my own retreat. I knew, I do want to back up for a second, because I had children. You know, I ended up, in fact, I became pregnant when I was 17, and I had my daughter. I was married. We married when I found out I was pregnant. We were wanting to have a child, and so I was blessed with a daughter. But it was all, I wanted to get pregnant because I think maybe that was, you know, a piece that would say, and I'm still processing this right now, that it could be a piece of correcting what I did. We're knowing that I'm bringing life now into the world, mm-hmm. not taking life.
Did it feel like that when you did have your daughter? It's like, I kind of evened something out here.
I brought life. Yeah, created life. God created in me life, and I had life mm-hmm. and gave birth to my daughter. And she's a huge blessing.
Oh, well, she's going to watch this probably and really feel good about that. Well, I have to ask, what do you make of, in society today, this very loud and aggressive defense of abortion and abortion rights and calling it women's rights and saying it's a human right to be able to do this? I'm very curious what your thoughts are on that. I've driven into Uptown Normal and seen groups of men and women with signs saying, keep your hands off my uterus, keep your laws away out of my uterus, that abortion rights are human rights. What do you make of all that?
Well, abortion, I mean, when we go to God's perfect plan, and God's perfect plan is creation, and before the fall, we were created to multiply, and we are God's image bearers. We are children of God, and we are His. We are His image bearers, and so it is not reproduction or it's not a health issue. It's a sin issue if you take a life. We are His image bearers. So it's shedding innocent blood, and it's a shedding of a human life. That life is valuable, no matter what size you are. when the conception happens, that's the beginning of life. That's when you're, you know, that is the beginning. And so that life is a human life at an embryo, just as it is a human life, and just as I am and you are sitting here, much taller, much more formed, much more mature than what we where we started when that conception happened. So when I hear the arguments of saying, stay out of my uterus and that, they are blinded by the fact that they may think that's a health issue, but it's a sin issue.
It's a humanity issue.
A humanity issue, yes.
Regardless, it seems like what you're saying is regardless of the stage of development that you happen to be at, you are still a person and a human, and therefore, especially if you're not, if you're innocent, you should not be killed, regardless of if you were just conceived or if you're 1 year old, 5 years old, 80 years old.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we're, human life is valuable. We're all valuable to God. And we're His image bearers. Mm-hmm. And
what might you say to young college men and women who strongly support abortion rights and abortion laws or pro-abortion laws? What do you just kind of say to them? Like, where maybe is your core disagreement that leads you to believe one way and them to believe another? And what would you like them to maybe understand? It's a loaded question, I know.
It's very loaded.
Yeah. So take your time.
I think that in this world, there's the world ways and then there's the God, you know, God's ways. And deception is of the world. And the lies that we listen to, whether it's through our media, whether it's how we were growing up. I mean, nowadays, you know, from a very early age, you're taught that that's okay. And it's not okay. And as, you know, to speak into a college person's life, I would have to have that relationship with them. I would have to be, you know, walking along with them. But I think there's a lot of deception in this world of what truth is and what is not truth. I mean, I know everything, there's a lot of beliefs that it's relevant. You know, whatever my truth is my truth. But it's like, what does God say? And what is in the Bible? What is His, you know, what's true about anything is what God says about it. Mm-hmm. And God said about it was, I created man and woman to conceive, to create. And it's a life. And murder is murder. Taking innocent blood is taking innocent blood. And, you know, we can be living in denial of that truth for as long as we, you know, want. It's what we choose and how to live our life, you know.
It's always been interesting to me to hear people say, this is my truth, because really there's the truth.
Correct.
And then there's your opinion.
Right.
Oh, man, well, your insights are just, they're rare. Maybe they're not rare, but it's rare to hear someone come out and tell them like you've done on this podcast. And as we're getting towards the end of this conversation, I'd like to circle back to something we briefly touched on at the beginning of this all. And that was you, when you went to your retreat, you had God's word said over you. What were those words that helped you so much in your life?
Well, leading into going to the retreat, God was massaging my heart. I was, you know, in order for a man or a woman to enter into the retreat, you know, you can't go in with just your head. God's going to be preparing your heart for that as well. You want to be ready. I was desperate. I wanted God's healing. I wanted whatever it was within me to be taken out that route. So going into that, God was already massaging my heart. When I pulled into the parking lot, I just felt it. deeper still is, you know, the three pillars are, it's saturated in prayer, it's saturated in worship, it's saturated in God's word. Pulling in to the retreat, I was immediately met from with a lady that came up to my car, and it was just the love. There was so much love and acceptance that I couldn't hardly take it in. It was like, you don't need to be carrying my bags, you know? And I mean, they did, and it was hard for me to accept that. And so as each step of the way into the building and each step of the way going in, it was beautiful. You felt God's presence there. His presence was there. It was a beautiful surroundings. We were treated and met with such kind, loving team. There was no judgment, no criticism, no, you just felt the love. And so at the very opening, they talk about how hard it is to be at a retreat, you know, how hard it is. But it's His sovereign will that brought me there that bring other men and women there. It's His sovereign will. Our hearts are ripe and ready to receive all that He has for that retreat. And He's massaging our hearts. And He's getting us ready and preparing us. It's not going to be easy. There's painful places that we have to go. But in order to heal, everybody, you know, you may think of it as people want to heal. They want to go through the process. They want to go through it and get the end result, but they don't really want to go through the process. It may be too painful. And the end result's great, but just going through that. And He equips us. He was there. His word spoken, it was the worship songs that were sung over me specifically. They pray over those songs. They pray over, and there's a certain song that God had for me, specifically already designed for me before I even entered that retreat. And I felt it. I felt the word. The word was just bathed over us. And that's, you know, the teachings from the moment you step in. One of the things in order to heal is you got to bring things out in the light. It's not just factual. It is going from your head to your heart. And that factual information, yeah, I had an abortion. Yes, it was a Brown Clinic building. Yes, but what all was transpiring, you know, like, and that's where I looked at, like, what was the beginnings, but what was happening and where was my life afterwards? What are the strongholds that took a hold of me after, you know, after my abortion, the things that I all of a sudden was thinking, well, that's just who I am, you know, and it's lies from the evil one. It's lies. Mm-hmm. And so those are all starting to get dismantled in that retreat. And it's like you put on your big boots and you're going to go in. And I was prepared. I was desperate. I wanted all that God had for me because I knew that weekend was where He called me for such a time as this for my healing. And I knew that He was going to do it. It wasn't me. He was doing it. And He brought teams, the team that comes in. You know, we want a vertical relationship with the Lord. That's, you know, we want that. We also have a horizontal relationship. And the team that came alongside me, they loved me. They were holding my hand as I walked through some of the hardest part of my life, you know, sharing what I did or what I needed. I had moral guilt. You know, I think that in my head, I knew I was forgiven. I knew that the Lord, you know, forgave me, but it wasn't in my heart yet. And so that moral guilt that I carried, like, you know, maybe if I do this and that for the, or this isn't enough, or this may be enough, or maybe, is it enough, Lord? That needed to be shown right then and dealt with at that time. And that's where, you know, surrendering it all. There's nothing anyone can do to add to what Christ did for us. He paid it in full. My abortion was paid. It has been cleaned and pure, washed with the blood of Jesus. I am forgiven. And so that moral guilt needs to be shown to, you know, we all need to reconcile with that, that we were guilty. I was guilty. But his blood, his cross, paid for that in full. And there's nothing I can add to it. And that's, you know, that was where it started. And then after that grieving, you know, there's a grieving of the baby that I lost. I didn't realize that was when, you know, I know you asked me earlier about the baby or what was I told, you know. Mm-hmm. It was during that time it went from my head to my heart as I was grieving the baby that I lost. And it was when I was able to, one of the things we do in Deeper Still, we have spiritual, we have symbols, tangible symbols to illustrate a spiritual reality. And that reality, what I needed to go through was grieving, because we as a society, we don't let women and men grieve their, that choice of an abortion. They don't, they're not able to grieve. They may grieve on their own in a way, on their own.
It's like, don't make it public.
Right, right. So it's just bathed in prayer and bathed in his word. And each step, you take a step and you say yes. And that's what I did. And he honors our yes. My yes here today, I'm honoring him with it. So
when you hear his voice, you certainly don't harden your heart. You go where he wants you to go.
Right.
And it seems like it's working for you. And when you just tell me this story, it's like so many things are going through my mind. First of all, you're saying that you can feel God there. Well, yeah, because what is God? God is love. And then everyone's so loving to one another. And then, I mean, I'm thinking also, you're saying God went through, Jesus went through all these things for us. And it's almost like he went through them with us too, because when you had the anxiety of going into this and you know it was going to be difficult and you know you're going to ultimately wind up somewhere good, it reminds me of when Jesus is in the garden and he's sweating. Right. He's like, this is really going to not be good, but may your will be done, Lord.
Correct.
And it's like you're saying, I'm going to go to the retreat and I know it's going to be good, but it's going to really hurt. And yeah, I too much is going through my head. It's beautiful what you're saying, though, and it's almost enough to bring someone to tears. I'm sure plenty will be brought to tears just watching this. As we wrap this thing up, though, first of all, thank you so much for boldly, courageously telling your story, because it is a vulnerable one, and I sincerely appreciate your bravery in doing it, and I know so many people are going to benefit from hearing this. My last question is there anything you want to just let people know? Maybe it's about your organization. Maybe it's something they can take moving forward, maybe in regards to just life in general or in regards to the topic of abortion. Is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap things up?
Sure. In telling my story, and I've said this a few times, and I don't know if people understand it, but I'm one beggar telling another beggar where there's food. I waited 41 years to go to my own retreat, and I carried a lot of wounds with me from that time of my abortion to the time that I went. And if there's any men or women out there that have an abortion in their past, just please come to Deeper Still. If God is calling you to that, and if you've been dealing with an abortion in your past, it is time. It is time to let that go. It is time to move on with your life the way that God has ordained you to move and to carry in the gifts of your calling, to walk those out, that we can be hindered and we can be hindered in our own chains and bondages from the sin of abortion. But God wants to take those chains off and those grave clothes off of you. And he wants to bring healing and lasting freedom and healing to you, to your soul, to your spirit, so that you can walk out your destiny. And if there's anyone out there, please contact deeperstill.org to come to a retreat.
If you're any indication of what they can expect to happen, that should be all the motivation they need. But Becky Billiter, thank you so much for coming on today. It's truly been an honor. It's been a very moving and enlightening conversation, and I just have to say thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for watching and listening to this episode of The Paul Garcia Show. If you enjoyed it, be sure to give it a share and leave a comment on what you thought of that conversation. Until next Sunday, I'm your host, Paul Garcia. God bless, and have a great week.